Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros. Welcome to the first ever Halloween edition of Registered Ear Offenders.
We'll be scarier than usual.
Yeah, we have a couple specialty, novelty bits planned for you to commemorate the occasion. Chris Z here at the helm, as always. My right-hand man, my number one, Sal Rodriguez.
Numero uno, Salvador Rodriguez.
Well, that's been a while. Have you seen that guy has not aged well? Remember the guy, the handsome dude who played number one on Star Trek: The Next Generation?
No, I am not a nerd.
Oh, all right. No, you just collect. You're a cool figurine collector.
No, I'm just weird, is what I've gathered, and eccentric.
How the hell are you out there in listener land? We're so happy to be here. We got a special show for you. Give us a call, 800-893-9562. 800-893-9562. Go ahead and give us a call. Share your Halloween stories. Share your costume. Share your plans for the weekend. When is Halloween exactly, Sal?
Halloween is next Wednesday. And I got to tell you, your brother's intro music sure has changed a lot over the years.
It has. It's gotten darker. As he's gotten older and success has eluded him, it's brought out the worst.
The name of that song is officially called Tubular Bells, which is not scary, and yet it doesn't sound scary. But since it is now, hand in hand with The Exorcist, that is just now known as The Exorcist theme, even though the official name is Tubular Bells.
It's almost just as a general interest piece. I wonder if we shouldn't compile a list of songs that everybody knows, but nobody knows the name of. For example, how many people out there know what Dueling Banjos is? Everybody's heard Dueling Banjos.
Sure.
I guarantee there's people out there that could identify it from the first note, but don't know that it's called Dueling Banjos.
Sure, even guys who have been actually raped by Hicks would not be able to recognize Dueling Banjos.
Even guys who hear it every night in their nightmares don't know what it's called. You know, another song that's like that, you ever heard of this one? It's entirely musical, and it goes, no, it has a few lyrics. I think it has one refrain throughout the whole song. It was in Swingers. Pick up the pieces. Yeah, that's right. For the longest time, I did not know what it was called or who sung it. And now I know that it's called Pick Up the Pieces, but I still don't know who sings it.
I think that's Average White Band, I think.
Ooh.
I think that may be the case. Jeremy might know. We got Jeremy Hansen today in the studio today. Our normal guy, Nick Chacon, is out today. I hope he's feeling okay. And we have Jeremy Hansen, the owner of the station here, representing.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Do you know, is that song Average White Band?
I have no idea, but my friend here, David, says yes.
Yeah, I won. I would have won the trivia contest.
So, Jeremy, where is Nick? What's got him out today?
I got a message from Nick, and he's like, hey, I got some... Dude, I got some shit to do today, man. Can you cover...
Slow it down a little.
You're talking too fast, Jeremy.
You're right.
I think Nick told me last week that the heat had him kind of zapped all summer. And he said, in fact, one day he was so tired he slept through his nap.
Hey, you know, if you see Nick Chacon, he's a friend of mine on Facebook, he has a father. His father's on Facebook, and his father looks like a cholo about to kick your ass.
Is that where he got the name Chacon from?
There's a famous boxer named Bobby Chacon. In fact, Bobby Chacon's son nearly kicked my ass in Pacoima growing up.
But he's white as a sheet.
Yeah, but his father's a cholo, man. Oh, hey, by the way, speaking of Facebook, want to remind our people to like Registered Ear Offenders on Facebook, and we would like to give a special congratulations to, what's his name, Jeff Rosen?
Josh Rosen. Weston, Florida, who won the Nine Finger CD. He was the first person to like us on Facebook last week. Again, we need those likes, guys, so please, whenever you can, get around to that. And go ahead and drop us a line. Leave us a message, right?
Yeah, leave us a message on the Registered Ear Offenders page. We also have our tweeting. You can find my tweets at Sal Los Angeles.
And that is mine. Guys, I'm going to give out the phone number one more time, 800-893-9562. Give us a call here because I've had some complaints, Sal.
Complaints about what?
I hate to have to call you out on the air, but I have heard that from two separate listeners that they logged on to Twitter.
Yes.
And they're disappointed with the volume of witticisms that you've produced or not produced, as it were.
Since last week, I have tweeted two or three times, okay, and I will commit to tweeting daily starting today.
All right, guys, get on there and encourage Sal to tweet daily by showing him your appreciation.
What do we got on the show today, man? What are we doing on the show today?
We have one of my favorite segments, Sketchy Characters, and we have a special edition of Sketchy Characters.
Oh, it's the Halloween episode.
It is, and usually they're pretty, they're comedic in nature, and they're short and sweet, but this one's a lot more morose. It's a lot darker, and I think it perfectly fit the occasion.
Yes.
So I set it aside just for today. We've also got Confessions. Again, special Halloween edition. At least mine is. I don't know about yours.
No, mine is. It's a Halloween confession, and I tell you, man, it's a doozy. It's downright embarrassing.
So they're low points, so to speak, in our lives that just happen to fall in or around Halloween.
What's interesting is that in a subsequent deal we got here, when we peaked, coming at the end of the show, is that my confessions and when we peaked happened on the same night.
And also, as our guest today, we've got. My God, playwright. Well, dramaturge is the same. I think the technical term for that. Stand-up comedian, published author, essayist, Dylan Brody. We're happy to have him on the show. We got him coming up. This guy's got a 2-page bio here.
His bio is tremendous. In fact, it's like single-spaced 2 pages. I cannot even read all of it.
Yeah. His humor segments and commentaries have appeared on KYCY Radio in San Francisco, WBAI Pacifica Radio in New York, and Pacifica in Los Angeles as well. He's appeared on A&E's Comedy on the Road, Fox TV's Comedy Express, and has landed solid punchlines on season 1 and 2 of Showtime's The Green Room with Paul Prevenza.
In other words, Chris, he is much, much more successful than us.
In other words, he's more successful than I am in comedy and in 2 or 3 additional areas.
He is successful across the board in 3 or 4 different areas where you and I are struggling to have likes on Facebook.
Yeah. I will tell you this, though. Seeing guys like Dylan, seeing guys like Antonio, or who was our guest last week, it does give me hope. Because what I see is a climate of rampant anti-intellectualism in this country, and it's only getting worse. And when I see guys that have succeeded by playing to the height of their intelligence, it does motivate me. It does keep me in high spirits.
I'm excited. We also have recurring segment Chris's Corner.
That's right, and it just so happens that also I have a special Halloween related. Chris's Corner from quite some time ago.
And you and I are wearing costumes today. We are dressed like the village people today.
That's right. I'm the construction worker.
And I am the police officer.
No, I'm the foreman, though. You know, my clothes are clean. My muscles aren't as well developed as the guys that work for me.
I know, we can't see your muscles today because normally you've been known to wear tank tops to the studio.
I have, but as you know, there's a camera in the room now. And I feel like... The only way I can be okay with that camera is if I was losing weight and that was documenting my loss. But I don't want people to see me and go, hey, he's been talking about eating healthier for a long time. I did just get back on the horse, man.
Yeah, yeah. You've been asking me. I see Chris has been texting me, asking me if he'd like to go exercise with him.
Yeah, I've been, I won't lie, man. This heat wave this summer took me out of the running. Also, I suffered a financial setback. So I was working a little bit more than usual.
Yes.
A lot of what I do is physical and, I mean, I was just wiped out, man, for like 2-3 months, and now I'm getting back in the gym, and I feel it. I've lost a lot of strength, but I'm committed to getting back. I'm not somebody for whom working out is an option.
No,
it's
I understand.
Not for vanity.
No, I understand.
I go to garbage if I don't work out.
No. Yeah. My goal is not to try to be hot, to try to be skinny. My goal with exercise is just don't look obese. Don't look obese. Can't look obese. Must not look obese.
I think it's Kevin James had a funny joke where he said, "I just don't want to jiggle when I brush my teeth." That's exactly. My goal for work.
Yeah, when I bend over into the sink to spit water into the sink, I don't like seeing my chest. I was going to do chest and breast, like jest, jiggling over the sink.
Well, we got started a little late, Sal, so we should jump into the show.
All right, man.
Hey, Jeremy, you up and at 'em in there? Can you hit that sketchy characters for me? Ladies and gentlemen, very special edition, a Halloween edition of Sketchy Characters.
And now, Sketchy Characters presents Rich Man.
Miles Merriweather, a robust, wheelchair-bound man in his 50s, bides time in his lavish office. He exudes the unmistakable aura of a bitter drunk. He takes a hard swallow of scotch.
A man of my means can afford the finer things. The finest of the finer things. Dressage horses, priceless Picassos. anything except a new spine. Granted, I was the fool who bought the Maserati, but I was not the fool who attempted to pass a convoy of earth movers on a winding two-lane highway. That was Jenna, my wife, who miraculously escaped the carnage unscathed.
Miles, why is there a huge box in the hall?
It's a gift for your niece.
Shit, when is...
Sunday.
This Sunday? Why didn't you ship it?
I thought you might want to choose the card.
Christ, Miles. You thought I'd rather her presents show up late than without a fucking card? From now on, leave the thinking to me.
He diverts his attention to a photograph of Jenna on his desk. He studies it intently.
I loved Jenna. Long before she realized that it behooved her to love me.
Miles lays the photo face down. He takes a long gulp from his glass.
10 years ago, Jenna phoned me in dire straits. She and her lover were being held without bail. Robert Ranzulli, a truck driver, had built a nationwide network for moving methamphetamine. He bought a big home in a nice neighborhood, paid in cash. One day, federal agents crashed their party. That same day, I sold several thousand shares of Intel in the unpopular conviction that tech was a bubble soon to burst. My first opulent purchase was Morris Najam, Esquire. Jenna received immunity for her testimony.
Miles glances at his watch and smiles ruefully.
Jenna should be arriving at the posh night spot she frequents on her nightly girls' night out shortly. Paolo, also her personal trainer, tends the bar.
Miles pours himself another scotch.
Salud!
He drowns it with one gulp. The tonic rejuvenates him.
You see, countless nights of solitude have helped me see the forest through the trees and to react accordingly, such as liquidating my assets and wiring the proceeds to an orphanage in Peru this morning. Now, where was I? Ah, yes, Paolo. According to his visa, Paolo wore out his welcome months ago.
Miles, Paolo was picked up by the INS.
The INS? Good Lord!
Send Morris to their downtown detention center.
Impossible,
in 526.
Impossible, love. He left for St. Croix this morning.
St. Croix? What for?
A lengthy retreat. Perhaps Bill Bernard could assist you.
Who the hell is Bill Bernard?
He's your travel agent, dear. You saw him just this morning.
Of course. I'm visiting my mother next month.
Las Vegas is a long way from Little Rock.
Fuck you, you limp dick motherfucker. I'll take you for every dime. You hear me? I never loved you.
I know.
He casually opens his desk drawer and reaches inside.
Pop quiz, class. What is the quickest way to void a life insurance policy?
Well, that's an uplifting episode of Sketchy Characters.
God, that was dark, man. That was probably the darkest thing on the radio besides Orson Welles' War of the Worlds, man. That was...
What I do admire is that he requires alcohol to feel suicidal, whereas I do not require it.
Yeah, I drink to stave off the suicidal thoughts.
Exactly. I drink so I don't kill myself.
He's doing it all wrong.
That was great, man. Was that played off a 78 or a 45? That was as scratchy as hell.
Which is the small one?
That's the 45.
Okay, then that's what it was.
They're played off 45s that you found in your attic. That was Sketchy Characters. We do our best to have that every other week, Sketchy Characters, and that was a very special Halloween episode.
Yeah, and you may remember, we were actually supposed to do one last week, but because of Halloween falling on this week, we had to kind of shift things around a little bit, so we're actually going to have another Sketchy Characters for you next week as well.
Wow!
Yeah. Man, again, we lost 3 minutes on the up ramp on the way in, so let's just jump into the next segment,
oh,
which is going to be a very special Halloween edition of Confessions.
A very special Halloween episode of Confessions, which I believe has its own theme music. Scary Halloween Confessions music.
Should I start?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
Let it ride for just a few seconds and then you can go ahead and start.
The year was 2002.
No, I'm just kidding.
All right, we can bring that down. That's just our intro music. Thank you, Jeremy.
Sal, I'm not one to subscribe to such nonsense as such lily-livered, naive nonsense as love at first sight. But it didn't happen to me once. I met a girl at a bar, which, by the way, is a bad sign. If you ever see a beautiful girl sitting by herself at a bar drinking straight shots of vodka, there's a reason for that. You know, like when you're driving down the street and you're like, who would put a perfectly good microwave out on the street corner? No one would. That's why you don't take it, because you're going to take it. It's going to blow up. It's going to burn your house down. Sometimes, you know, you have to use common sense. But yeah, this girl was as pretty as it could be, man. And we just started talking. I saw her once or twice at karaoke, and we ended up dating for a while. And it was one of these things that just snowballed out of control. And near the end, we started, that crazy pattern where you can't stand each other. So every time you're together, you break up. So we started doing that. And then a day or two would pass and I'd go over there and, you know, one of us would capitulate, one of us would apologize and we'd get back together or whatever. So finally one day she surprised me. She threw me a curveball by saying like, no, I can't do this anymore. You know, I can't function at work. I can't do anything. We keep breaking up. I'm stressed out all the time. I'm crying all the time. And it really, threw a monkey wrench into my plans, because at this time it was my turn to go to her house and, somehow think that things were going to be different than they were 24, 48 hours ago.
All I keep thinking is that the sex must have been hot to go back and forth like this. You don't go back and forth like that unless the sex is hot.
Surprisingly, it was not that hot. Now, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I do remember being disappointed by the fact that she had, I don't know if there's a medical term for this, but that her vagina was like tapioca.
What I mean? It had white shit pouring out of it.
No, it didn't have any discharge like yogurt. No, that's not what I meant. What I meant is that there was very little resistance there. It was not turgid. Is that the word that I'm looking for?
It was not taut.
Yeah, it was almost as if it was made from, I don't know what, fatty tissue, I guess, you know? Whereas, ironically, the best sex I've ever had was with a woman who was about 42 years old, and so, I mean, she just had a vice grip in there. I mean, she had Stallone's over the top grip.
Work those Kegels, ladies. Work those Kegels.
Yes. But anyway, so when she, I didn't know what to do with myself. I was beside myself, and she said, "Listen, just give me some time to think. You know, give me like a day or two to think, and then we'll talk." So I leave and a couple of days pass and she's not responding. And, I think I call her once or twice and I'm trying to make up excuses to go over her house. Like, hey, I left some CDs over there. Let me go and get my CDs. And she seems pretty serious about, ending this. So finally, I'm sitting in my head going, well, what exactly is she doing to work this out? So I go over to her place, right? And she lived in an apartment complex and she's not there on a Saturday night, no less. It's like midnight. So I'm sorry to say that I engaged in my first and only act of stalking.
I do not believe only.
I was incensed, Sal, that her way of working out our relationship was going out and hanging out till 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. Well, where were you thinking, young lady? So I had to, every now and then I would have to, I'd see a car. Because what I did is I parked, she obviously knew what my car looked like. So I had to park on the far end of the parking lot of our apartment complex, which meant I couldn't see if she had come home. So every 20, 30 minutes, I'd have to get out and trek over to her place, And it was, I learned a lesson in confidence. Whatever you do, you have to do it with confidence, because occasionally people would walk by and you had to act like you belonged to walking around that complex at 12, 12:30, 1 a.m.
Not stalking.
Right. Yeah. And she had like a little kind of like a screened in porch, and you could see like, then there was like a window that you could kind of see into her kitchen, And so I had to go and like position myself at the far end, because I wanted to make sure she hadn't come home with anybody. And thank God she didn't, because it would have been one of those things where you ever hear a guy just like ruins his life over something incredibly stupid, like a minor traffic, dispute or something, and you just read the paper and go, God, I hope it was worth it.
Well, Chris, unless you tell me you had a large butcher knife in your hand, I don't see how this is related to Halloween.
I was stalking like a stalker. Isn't that kind of Halloweenish?
If you had a knife in your hand, yes.
I can neither confirm nor deny the presence of a knife in my hand.
We also give our speakers the opportunity to make an amends if they wish. Do you wish to make an amends to this young lady?
Absolutely not. Though I will tell you this, I'll do you one better. I actually had a photograph of her, and I took it to the whatever the photograph place, and I had it enlarged so that I could put it on the web, because this was the girl, who, this is a separate story, so I don't want to give too much away, who waited way too long to tell me she had herpes.
Oh, now that's a Halloween episode right there.
Back then, the internet was new, but I did have an inkling of its power. So I wanted to make sure that everybody out there knew that there was a reason that this girl was 21 years old, very pretty, and sitting at the bar drinking shots of vodka by herself. So anyway, that's my confession.
All right,
sticking to it.
Thank you, Chris. My confession this is directly related to Halloween, because I used to work at a haunted house at Magic Mountain. Over here in Valencia, California, we have a theme park called Magic Mountain, Six Flags Magic Mountain. And once a year, they have a special Halloween haunt. So I worked there one year, and I met a very large girl. She was young. She was large. This was a big girl. This girl was like 6'2". She was huge and heavy. I mean, she probably could have been a professional wrestler. She was so large. And she was in a clown outfit. She had the makeup. She had the full-on clown regalia. And she was like a crazy, demented clown. And she would jump out at you when you would go through the haunted house. Well, you know, you work there a few nights and you make friends with people. Well, I don't know how she divulged this or why she let people know, but she let people know that she liked to give blowjobs. It got so far one time I went to visit her in her little section, and I don't know how she started sucking on my fingers, and I had to reach up to put my hand in her mouth. So she starts sucking on my fingers. So she's like, I want to suck your cock. And so I said, okay. So on our break, we went to this little dark corner of the haunted house, and she got on her knees. I had to stand on a stool, I believe.
She said,
and she blew me with her big clown. I was blown by a big, fat, scary clown.
All right, so we've established that she was too tall.
Yes.
We've established that.
And, you know, I'm 5'7", so let's be clear. She was really tall, and I am not tall.
So she was not Gabrielle Reese, you know?
Like no. She was no volleyball player.
She was not a runway model.
Right? No.
Heavy as well. However, was she the least bit attractive?
No.
Okay.
But this corner
was dark.
It was dark.
End
there,
of story.
But there was just enough light for me to look down and see this scary clown face on my dick. I mean, that memory is just burned into my brain. So every Halloween, I think of the large, fat, horny clown that blew me in the darkness.
Now, did the clown face turn you on or turn you off?
It maybe come quicker. It made because I was like, I gotta come before she kills me.
I feel like you're Paul Ryaning the question here. You said it made me come quicker. Is that because you wanted to get it over with, or because you were hornier and that much more excited that you couldn't? I couldn't last.
Well, I needed to get back. We both needed to get back to our work, which was scaring people. So once I was done being scared, then we went to go back. So that's my confession. And there is no amends, because she really loved it. I mean, you know, guys, there are women out there that love giving blowjobs. Who knew?
My God, where does the time go, Sal? We're already 10 minutes behind. Let's go straight to our guest here. Man, I've been looking forward to having this guy on our show for several weeks. He writes and performs weekly for the David Feldman Show on KPFK. His material runs on XM Satellite Radio. And, there we go. He's an award-winning playwright, internationally acclaimed best-selling author, a humorist, a storyteller. His CDs are available from Stand Up Records at Amazon and downloadable at iTunes. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Dylan Brody.
Dylan Brody, ladies and gentlemen. Woo!
Thank you, Sal and Chris. How are you?
Welcome.
Good.
Hey, listen, you can feel free to put on the headphones, but I noticed our guest last week, Antonio Sacri, did not enjoy having the headphones on. So do as you will, wear the headphones, don't, whatever you like.
Well, I'm sitting in the room with you, so it feels a little silly to put on the headphones, to use amplification to hear someone I'm sitting across a table from. It's like, using an ice cream scoop to pick your nose. You
know, it's just, I've tried that.
It's
but we want you to be comfortable, Dylan. So whatever you like, headphones or not, as long as you're here with us. By the way, Dylan is officially our best dressed guest ever. He's wearing a silk vest.
Yeah, Dylan, if you would turn to the camera.
There's a camera?
There is a camera right up there. Wave to the camera. Let them see you. Also, very nice hair. I'm so jealous of what great hair. He's nicely dressed. He's got great hair. And he's talented. And he's tall.
My favorite thing is to come on a radio show and just be talked about. Not actually say anything. Just let people talk.
Please, we're talking here.
We're not done yet, Dylan.
Before we get underway, I have a couple of quick things to say. Jonathan Frakes was the name you were looking for earlier. Number one from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Jesus.
And the circus song. Know the title?
No,
do you know the title of the circus song? Everybody knows the song?
Sure.
It's called Enter the Gladiators.
Oh, yeah, because that sounds appropriate.
Yeah, the worst possible name for that, too.
That's about number 600 on my list of guesses. Wow, this is amazing, man. I'm looking at your bio here. Early 2007, Dylan Brody's Thinking Aloud brought long-form humor and insight, literate and literary, to a broad-based audience. The show, the first of its kind ever, enjoyed a successful six-month run on the main stage at the Hollywood Improv. That's amazing, man. It's a stand-up comedy club, a who's who for stand-up comedians, and you're telling me they brought in your one-man show for a six-month run?
It wasn't a one-man show. It was a show that I produced where I had other storytellers, other spoken word artists, and then I would get to introduce them to the world. And I now produce that show pretty much monthly at the Fake Gallery in Hollywood.
I only recently became aware that that you contribute regularly to, what is it, the Huffington Post?
I contribute semi-regularly to the Huffington Post. I do commentary for John Raby's Off-Ramp on KPCC for the past few months.
What is it, typically socio-political commentary?
The stuff for Huffington Post generally is. The stuff for KPCC is just sort of funny, whatever I think of for 500 words. And I send it in to John, and he says, oh, yeah, come and do that. But cut the third paragraph, because it's not funny.
No, I think the first time I saw Dylan perform, it was at the 3rd Street Promenade. And I wasn't aware of the embarrassment of riches that he possesses as an artist. And since then, it's just been, I've been continually impressed by what I've seen you do. I think you were just telling the world's dumbest...
the world's stupidest mugging story.
That's a great story. And it's available on one of your CDs.
It is nested within a story called Xenophobia and the Jewish Druid on my first CD, Brevity, available from Stand Up Records at Amazon.com and iTunes.
Guys, we got a clip of Dylan Brody today. It's from his third CD, A Twist of the Wit. So, Jeremy, can you please cue
those
up?
Those who are familiar with my work will know that many, and really, who isn't? Many of my stories can be lengthy and heavy and multi-textured shades of gray, like the prominent proboscis of the ponderous pachyderm. This first piece, to maintain the mammalian metaphor, is little more than a bit or two of gerbil fuzz, a beat or two of verbal jazz. It is a twist of the wit, a trick of the tongue, a tantalizing taste of linguistic terpsichore. It is a pithy parcel of prosodic prestidigitation, if you will. And if you won't, you're a bunch of anti-Semitic bastards. I like to support the arts. On my way home, I stopped at a convenience store to buy milk for my morning coffee, ice cream for my wife. On the way in, I was approached by an unemployed magician. He had the haunted eyes of a hungry hound. He said, I got a quarter in my pocket, I can make it disappear. I got a quarter in my pocket, I can make it disappear. I said, show me. I swear to you, all he did was snap his fingers. He said, it's gone. I said, where did it go? He said, check your pocket. I checked my pocket, and sure enough, there, amongst all my other loose change, a bright, shiny quarter. I said, how do I know this is yours? He said, check the date. I said, it's from 1994. He said, that's mine. I returned it to him. I said, show me again. He said, I never repeat myself. I never repeat myself. I said, show me another. He said, I will need a $10 bill. I said, all I have is a 20. He said, that will do. I handed him a $20 bill. He folded it up tight right in front of me. No abracazam, no alacadabra. When he unfolded it again, it was a 5. He returned it to me. I said, that's amazing. Change it back. He said, if I could change 5s into 20s, I wouldn't be out here working for tips. I said, I'm sorry, I didn't know I was supposed to tip you. I like to support the arts. I gave him the fine. He thanked me for my patronage. I went into the convenience store. I bought milk for my morning coffee. I bought ice cream for my wife. As I came back out, he was approaching another man in the parking lot. He said, I got a quarter in my pocket. I can make it disappear. I got a quarter in my pocket. I can make it disappear. I watched him with the hungry eyes of a hunting hawk, and I swear to you, ladies and gentlemen, all he did was snap his finger.
And that was...
with my work, we'll know.
Yeah, just keep running it over and over again.
Yeah,
for the
yeah,
rest
we're just going to run it on a loop. That was from a twist.
Encore,
of,
encore.
A twist of the wit. Tell us, you've also studied at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts in London. What was that like?
I did my senior year of college at the Royal Academy, the very very pompous Royal Academy. I studied, you know, stage combat and elocution and breath control and Shakespeare and textual deconstruction and theater history. And I have a funny story, actually, I hope. While I was there, a friend of mine called me. He was studying at the marginally less pompous London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts. And he said, I'm in a Tennessee Williams play. Will you come see it? And to my mind, nothing promises a great evening of theater like British college students doing American Southern accents. So I put on my very best go-to-theater shirt and I took the tube over to Lambda. And it was a pretty good show. And there's this one woman who was just gorgeous. She was just stunning in this. And she was funny and she had a pretty good accent. So when my friend said, do you want to go out with us for a pint afterwards? I said, yeah. And I went out for a pint and I was flirting with this woman and drinking the lukewarm beer in the giant glasses. And we'd been talking for about an hour and a half when I realized that I had not learned her name. And there's that point in a conversation where it's no longer appropriate to say, I'm sorry, I'm too self-involved to be allowed out in public. You know, but it had been going pretty well, and I was charming, and I was thin and attractive and young, and I had my exotic American accent going for me, so that was all good. So I figured I could get away with this, and I said, oh, I'm sorry, what is your full name? As though I was going to do some bar trick where I numerologically added up the letters and told her four. In fact, as I said it, I think I was actually devising a numerological bar trick where I would add up the letters in her name and tell her fortune. And she said, oh, it's Julie Kate Olivier. And I said, oh, really? Any relation to Sir Lawrence? Because I wanted, you know, to be smarmy enough that she would know that I knew that she had heard this joke every day since she had gone into theater. But she was comfortable with who she was. So she said, yes, he's my father. And I had ambitions for Shakespearean proportions. And at that moment, she went from being a hot prospect to being a golden ticket. You know, like for an hour and a half, I'd been thinking of ways of taking advantage of her. And now all I could think of was ways to take advantage of her. And I knew that if I waited just a moment longer, she was going to see what was going on in my head and my venal American ambitious eyes. So I covered by taking a sip of the beer and I steered my focus back to the drape of her hair and the curve of her neck and that place at the front of her clavicle where I knew if I touched her with my lips and breathed out through my nose, I could make her go, and I had this moment going in my head, and I imagined waking up next to her in those stiff, low thread count British sheets and having tea with her in the morning over a formica tabletop with the cool British sunlight slanting in through a window between. And then unbidden into my fantasy, her father came down the stairs to join us, probably emerging from a tryst with Danny Kaye. And he was wearing like a burgundy bathrobe and velour slippers. And the image was, I could see the pale blue veins through the translucent flesh of his spindly old English actor legs. And it was just vivid and big and huge in my head. And the image just pushed the beer out through my nose. And I, in order to protect my expensive shirt, caught it in my glass. And then I looked to Julie Kate Olivier, hoping to hear, oh, cricket or jolly well done, whatever the hell British people say when they see ninja-like reflexes in action. And I saw a look of horror in her eyes as, from her perspective, this venal American actor had heard of her noble theatrical lineage and tried to impress her with a bar trick in which he recycled beer through his own sinus cavity into his own glass. And I heard a voice in my head that spoke with exquisite breath control and elegant elocution. And the voice said, not to be. And that's probably my most vivid memory from going to Dorado.
I thought you were going with the, she thought you did a spit take.
It was grotesque. It was a true moment of personal grotesquerie that I carry with me in my closet of shame.
Was it followed by a hacking cough for several minutes long?
I like, Dylan, that you referenced Danny Kaye. Chris, finally we have a guest that makes references older than mine. Chris gives me a hard time when I reference Bela Lugosi.
First of all, I would think of Bela Lugosi as an older reference than Danny Kaye.
It's a reference pre-1970. Chris gives me a hard time that he says most of my references are pre-1970.
Well, I think I give Sal a hard time particularly because he'll often stare at you wide-eyed when you use references from 15, 20 years ago, but then in the next breath, he'll drop a...
I don't want to get into your marital argument.
Hey, tell us about your martial arts. You are a practitioner of the martial arts, namely Taekwondo.
I'm a Taekwondo master, a Hapkido instructor, a Kikumdo instructor. That's a Korean sword style. And I mainly study the martial arts as a way of making myself more attractive to giant, demented, blowjob-giving clowns. It changed my world. It changed my life.
You wrote a show about it.
I have a one-person show called More Arts, Less Martial that talks about the way in which it changed my world. It allowed me to quit smoking pot. It allowed me to quit smoking cigarettes. And ultimately allowed me to be less angry all the damn time.
How long ago was that, and what made you focus on martial arts versus golf or alcohol?
Well, first of all, coming out of the theatrical training that I had a lot of stage combat, a lot of swordplay, and had somehow managed to do all of this swordplay without ever thinking of myself as athletic, because I was a non-athletic kid to begin with. And I went to my therapist. I had gone into a deep depression. I can tell I'm going into a depression when I wake up in the morning and I go to shave and I look in the mirror and my first thought is, oh, great, this guy again. You know, then I know that my mood is about to spiral like Larry Flint at the Guggenheim. So my wife had finally said, you have to talk to someone. You're absorbing all the light in the apartment. And I went into therapy. And about 2 weeks into therapy, I walked past a martial arts studio and saw swords in the window and thought, oh, well, that sort of plays into something that I've always wanted to, and it's interesting, and it seemed to me like a way of getting some physical exercise while approaching it from sort of a philosophical and intellectual perspective, which is how I approach everything because I am deeply, deeply pompous.
I wouldn't know that by the vest.
I'm being mocked. I come here. I sit in the back of your limo. I ride down. They cut me off at the shrimp bar at your craft services table.
You sucked up all the blue label, by the way.
And now I'm being mocked for my vest. I did suck up all the blue label, but the truth is there was only half a bottle left and no glasses.
Dylan, let me ask you this. I remember
you can ask me anything, Chris Z.
At a chance meeting, you mentioned that you were in some kind of negotiation to share a stage with the unknown comic, and there was some kind of dispute versus I think they wanted you to open for him, and you were insistent that he should be opening for you. Did that ever pan out?
Wow, this was a long time ago, and that's not exactly what was going on, but that sounds like something I would say.
Was this before or after Danny Kaye?
Murray Langston,
yep,
was the unknown comic.
From The Gong Show.
Yes, the unknown comic from The Gong Show. And that, as you may or may not know, that all had to do with the writer's strike that was on at the time. So it may be wrong of me to out him as the unknown comic.
No, he already outed himself.
Okay.
Yeah, he has.
And it happened, there was a club in Florida that I wanted to go play. It was a jazz club. And I thought it would be very cool to do my spoken word stuff at a jazz club where I really wouldn't feel obligated to be funny every 15 seconds and I could just put words in order and sound cool. And they said, we'd like to have Murray Langston work with you. We know him. We've got a relationship. And I said, that's great. But it wasn't who would go first. It was who would get billed as headliner. Because we would both probably do about the same amount of time. We could have been co-headliners. I didn't care. But the question was whether I was going to be booked as a feature act or not. Because as a feature act, I cannot comfortably negotiate for the kind of money that I need to make for a trip to Florida to be tolerable.
I think performing in Florida, you cannot negotiate for enough money to perform in Florida.
Chris is from Florida originally.
Yeah. You'd be surprised. You may not be doing it yet, but there are some gigs and clubs in Florida that pay enough to make up for the size of the mosquitoes.
And the age of the clientele and the
See, that's not a problem for me. The age, I work very well to an elderly demographic. I don't say fuck a lot. I tend to be intellectual in a way that was more acceptable years ago than it is now.
You remind me of Robert Klein all of a sudden.
This does not bother me even a little bit.
Yeah, you do. You remind me of Robert Klein without the tweed, of course.
I've been known to wear tweed.
Finish the story. So what happened with the unknown comic then?
The gig never came together. There was as you may or may not know, there was a huge hurricane that destroyed New Orleans a few years ago. And as a byproduct, did some damage to a great deal of the Gulf Coast tourism in Florida as well.
I've got to research this.
And that closed the club that we were trying to get into. But he seems like a nice man. And he seemed like a perfectly lovely human.
I'm curious about, it seems that you do perform outside of, nationally, let's say. What kind of agent, what kind of representation books someone like you? Because you're somewhat unique. I mean, you're
not any. I had a manager for a long time who was booking me, and he was pretty good about understanding what I was about. And now I'm doing a lot of my own booking while I look for someone who can figure out how to book me. Because what I do isn't normal. I don't work all that. I mean, I can do straight-ahead stand-up comedy and headline comedy. In fact, I'm doing one tomorrow evening at the Actors Comedy Studio on Beverly in Hollywood. $5 at the door, but if you say purveyor of fine words and phrases, you get in free.
Say that fast.
Purveyor of fine words and phrases.
Purveyor of fine words and phrases. Purveyor of fine words and phrases. See, I've already messed it up as a tongue twister. You're a hybrid. You're multi-talented and you're a hybrid. So
that's correct. I am Perk Wolf.
Yeah, it's hard to categorize you sometimes, right? People need to try to fit you in a box.
Which is why when I find a box, I want it to be made of tapioca.
What? These are some impressive credentials. When Dylan has shared comedy stages from New York to Los Angeles with some of the comedy world's biggest stars, including Adam Sandler, Dennis Miller, John Lovitz, Larry Miller, Norm Macdonald. I mean, Richard Belzer, my God, these are comedy legends.
Well, I've been around for a long-ass time is the thing, and they weren't comedy legends when I was sharing the stage with them, or the stairs. I used to hang out on the stairs with Richard Belzer in the old days. I was the house MC at a place called Chrissy Francis's Hollywood Comedy Room in the mid-80s, and these were all guys that used to come in and work there. I worked with Adam Sandler when I was still a feature act. I think I may have been opening at that point, and he was the feature. On the East Coast, I was doing a little tour and didn't understand why people loved him yet.
Dylan, let me ask you about your novels. You've written A Tale of a Hero, Song of a Sword, Warm Hello. Are these comedy slanted works?
Not even a little bit. A Tale of a Hero and The Song of Her Sword is a feminist anthem for the young adult market. It's about a young woman who goes to hero school. It's adventure fantasy. The Warm Hello was science fiction. It's still science fiction. I haven't changed it. I have a new novel that I haven't yet sold called Laughs Last that is set entirely in the comedy world that I have great blurbs on from Carl Reiner and Paul Krasner.
But you're so witty. You're so humorous. When you sit down to write, do you have to tell yourself, don't be funny? Don't be funny.
No, not at all. Here's the thing. Oh, that sounded like the sound effect of the guy drinking scotch from your earlier sketch. If what I'm writing isn't funny, it doesn't come out funny. My next CD, in fact, is going to have a lot of stuff that's not all that funny on it. Because I'm not afraid of being who I am and doing what I do. That's not true. I'm a little afraid, but I don't let that stop me from being who I am and doing what I do. When I'm writing science fiction, if something funny comes up in the course of what I'm writing, I'll allow that to happen on the page. There's no rule that says you can't be funny when you're writing other genres. But the truth is, whatever I'm writing has its own tone and its own natural rhythms, and those aren't always funny. Part of the difficulty of living in Hollywood, which is not about art, it's about an industry of entertainment.
Yes.
And entertainment, of course, is the word people use when they don't want to take responsibility for what they're saying through their art. I find people wanting to pigeonhole me, wanting to pigeonhole everyone, because they want to know what they are selling and how they are selling it and how it is branded.
Everything's a product.
And I'm aware that I live in this world, in this society, in this culture, and yet I don't want to be untrue to who I am and what I do in order to give in to that. So I brand myself as a purveyor of fine words and phrases. I allow myself the freedom to be funny or to be eloquent or to be moving or to be poignant or to be pompous or poetic or naked, depending on what the circumstance requires.
Or vest wearing.
Or vest wearing. By this clothing vested on me, I hereby something.
It's funny. Something you said reminded me. It is funny that people will sometimes, when they hear that you're a comedian, they'll be like, you're talking about, I got into a car accident. Well, that was a bit right there. No, what on earth would make you think?
No, I lost my legs.
Yeah. How do I mine humor from an entirely humorless situation?
But the truth is, to my mind, all of those things are mineable.
I agree with you in that respect that there's a story there. It doesn't necessarily mean it's comedic in nature, though.
My grandmother once said to me, we are Jews. We do not believe in tragedy. We believe in horror, atrocity, and injustice. And we recognize that they're all hilarious.
Dylan, we'd like to thank you for joining us Gentiles today. We're going to move right along. We've got a very limited time frame here. We're going to move into Chris's Corner, where you can sit and judge his writing, and I'd love to hear. You could take me aside later and tell me what you think
of
it.
Feel free to provide color commentary after the fact. Ladies and gentlemen, one more big round of applause for Dylan Brody.
Mr. Dylan Brody.
CD, Chronological Disorder. His fourth CD with Stand Up Records was released on February 14th, 2012, and you can hear his comedic segments on the CBS Interactive Network, streaming to approximately 1.5 million listeners daily. With that said, time for me to move on to my contribution to the show here.
This is Chris's Corner. We do have a very special sponsor for Chris's Corner today. It is Story Salon, which has been going on for 14 years, every Wednesday at 8 p.m. at the Coffee Fix at 12508 Moore Park Street, Studio City, California, 91604. Their number is 818-762-0181. They've got free Wi-Fi, organic coffees for sale. Their hours are Monday through Saturday, 8 to 9 p.m., Sunday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., across the street from the Oyster House and the Studio City Library. Tell them Sal and Chris have registered Fenders sent you. That Story Salon at Coffee Fix, Wednesdays, 8 p.m., 12508 Moore Park Street, Studio City, California. Chris's Corner.
Chris's Corner is also brought to you by the Republican Party. The Republican Party, because the problem with feudalism was all that noblesse oblige.
In 1993, I was 17. I had long hair and spent most of my free time brooding over nothing of consequence. I kept my grades just high enough to keep my parents off my back. I was the class clown, in class and out. I kept a life-size cardboard cutout of martial artist and B-movie leading man Jean-Claude Van Damme in the backseat of my car. First-time passengers would glimpse Jean in the rearview mirror and recoil with fright. It never got old. Ric Flair was a bona fide misfit. That was all the commonality we needed to form a friendship. Rick's parents were beyond strict. They were borderline cruel. He never caused any real trouble, but they constantly treated him like he did. They read his journal, threatened him with drug tests. They often denied him permission to embark on some outing or another, seemingly just for the sake of saying no. On one occasion, when unforeseen circumstances forced them to leave town without him, Rick's parents expressly stated that they would be returning sometime Sunday. Sunday, October 31st. Saturday night arrived. I came in costume. My disguise consisted of nothing more than my Jean-Claude Van Damme cardboard cutout held up in front of me. I knocked. I heard the door open. "I'm here for Rick's party," I shouted. Silence. "I'm here for Rick's party," I reiterated with greater intensity. The silence abided. I peeked over Jean-Claude's shoulder to find a middle-aged married couple where Rick was supposed to be standing. The couple wore matching his and her scowl masks. "Richard, come here," Maritza shouted. A skittish Rick appeared at the hallway's end. "I thought you weren't throwing a party," she hissed. "I'm not," Rick whimpered. "I was just having some friends over." Plagued with guilt for sealing my friend's fate, I tried to retract my words by suggesting something to the effect of, No, Rick's not throwing a party. I just meant that if I'm here, it's a party. Maritza, who had never expressed the warmth towards me that one would expect from a close friend's mom, stared with contempt. Just then, a pickup truck pulled into the driveway. The three teens in the cab were covered in soap suds from having just passed through the car wash unsheltered. When just enough time had elapsed for the driver to process what was taking place, the truck sped off. The jig was officially up. However, I have never been one to concede defeat. Instead, I looked Maritza in the eyes and inquired, What do you think that was about? She slammed the door in my face. It was Chris's Corner, very Chris's special Halloween Corner. Edition.
A Halloween edition of Chris's Corner. Jeremy, I want to ask you, are we ending right at 2 today, or do we have the extra couple of minutes?
You got a few minutes.
Okay, great, because we did start a little bit late, so I wanted to ask you that. Okay, listen, we have a very special segment next. Thank you for Chris's Corner. We have next When We Peaked Halloween Edition. I'd like to breeze through this because I would love to see if Dylan has anything to add to this, any of his special When We Peaked. Although he's still on his way, so he is not. When We Peaked is a segment, Dylan, where we talk about times in our lives that were peak moments, when we were at our best, maybe we were young, maybe we were hopeful, optimistic. Not like now. So you might still be headed towards your peak.
When We Peaked is brought to you by Log Cabin Republicans. Log Cabin Republicans, elevating self-sabotage to a political ideology.
Thank you. That is our sponsor.
Yeah, a lot more sponsorship than this show than in the past.
That's it. All right. When We Peaked, we have a special Halloween intro, and mine is themed towards Halloween for When We Peaked. Kind of spooky, kind of new age spooky. All right, that's good. Thank you, Jeremy. All right, When We Peaked. This is connected because it occurred during the same time as my confessions when I had my killer clown encounter. I was about 19 or 20 years old. I was working at the haunted house at Magic Mountain, and it was a peak moment for me because it was probably the greatest time I had earning money. I was dressed as, it looked like my face was ripped off. I had blood all over me. I was dressed as sort of an old-time gardener. That was my official title, was old-time gardener. And I ran around with a chainsaw. They didn't have a chainsaw in the old-time days, but I ran around with my chainsaw. And I mowed down audiences. I would knock people down like dominoes as I ran with my chainsaw. I would jump off the railing. I would jump out of bushes. I would chase people through the amusement park with my chainsaw. I was so crazy and had such a great time with this. Not intoxicated on weed or alcohol, Dylan. They had to make rules. The next year, I understood, they made rules. Do not chase people. Do not jump off railings. Do not jump off of out of bushes. In other words, everything that I did, I was so crazy and nuts as a chainsaw killer for the Halloween spectacular, they had to make rules. That was my peak moment, 19 years old, old-time chainsaw gardener at Six Flags Magic Mountain, my Halloween peak moment.
I have my When We Peaked takes us back, Sal. It takes us back a little bit further than I usually go, which, as you know,
you usually stop at 17 and don't go beyond
17 years
that.
Old, yeah. That was a high point.
When I was 17, it was such a good year.
So there were peaks along the way to the summit. You know what I mean? There were hills along the way to the mountain. I was 13 years old. So that was a good 23 years ago. I attended a Halloween party. I was in 6th or 7th grade. And I took it too seriously. I had a Grim Reaper costume, and I had my mother spend a good half an hour making my face into a skull, you know, with a little kid, black and white, with the teeth
on
my lips.
I'm surprised it took that long.
I was very particular and insistent that she
Dylan,
know, she
did
get
you
right.
Get that?
All James Carville needs for Halloween is a scythe.
There we go. Thank you, Dylan.
So I show up at the party, and a game of truth or dare springs up.
And I'm listening.
Yeah, an attractive young lady named Courtney McAllister, I still remember it, was there. And, you know, I'd seen her. I never thought twice about her. And she mentioned that she liked me. They truth or dared her, and she mentioned she liked me. So when it came to me, they're like, you like Courtney? I was like, fuck yeah, of course I like her. I never thought, given her a second thought, but because she was a willing female, I seized the opportunity, and we ended up making out. That was my very first kiss, Halloween 23 years ago. And here's a nice little epilogue to that. Only a few weeks before, by pure coincidence, I had asked my brother, my big brother's about 4 years older than me. I said, Al, how do you kiss a girl? How do you make out with a girl? I've never done it before. And he said, there's nothing to it, man. It comes naturally. When you're there, you'll know exactly what to do. And sure enough, it was the truth, man. It was somehow second nature, even though I'd never done it before.
I usually just imagine I'm eating tapioca pudding. Dylan, have you got either a When We Peaked story or a Halloween story or a When We Peaked Halloween story?
Well, first of all, let me say my answer to when I peaked would always be 3.5 hours after I dropped.
Yeah.
Always be the answer to that
Are
question.
You experienced?
I have a Halloween story that I was in Greenwich Village on Halloween evening. And Greenwich Village in New York City on Halloween evening is a magnificent place. It's just men everywhere dressed up in their happiest fantasies. Men who have been out of the closet for years have found deeper, darker closets with new wardrobe to pull out and try on. And I was standing at the at a corner waiting to cross the street. And standing next to me was a young leather couple, a man in a leather vest and a leather cowboy hat and combat boots, and his leather boy slave, who was wearing nothing but what I can only describe as a suede scrotal sling. And I could tell who was the master because he had the other guy by the leash. And I smiled at them because it occurred to me that we live in a world where if you wait long enough and you're open enough to the possibilities, anyone can find someone to love. And as we're standing there, another couple dressed as sperm for the holiday danced up the street past us. In case we couldn't tell what they were singing, sperm, glorious sperm. I don't remember the whole song, Hot jizz in my mustache. I don't know. They went on up the street. And the leather boy slave turned to the leather boy master and said, freaks. And it occurred to me that we live in a wonderful world where if you wait long enough and you're open enough to the possibilities, anyone can find somebody to judge harshly.
Dylan Brody, ladies and gentlemen, tell our listeners where they can see you and where they can hear you.
You can see me tomorrow evening, that is Saturday evening, at the Actors Comedy Studio in Hollywood. Say the words Purveyor of Fine Words and Phrases to get in free. You can hear me regularly on KPCC, John Raby's Off-Ramp. You can hear me on KPFK on The David Feldman Show. You can buy me at Amazon.com or iTunes.
Great. And my name is Sal Rodriguez. I will be here tomorrow to be on Bad Advice here at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Chris, where are you going to be?
I'll be performing at the Young and Young Show in Tujunga, California tonight. It's 8 p.m. It's a free show, family-friendly, clean comedy.
Young and Young Show is brought to you by Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan, bad math for a brighter future.
We'd like to thank Skid Row Studios, Jeremy Hansen, our producer today. And we'd like to thank Wes Hambright, Orange Dog Music.
Like us on Facebook, guys. We're here every Friday, Skid Row Studios, 1 to 2 p.m., registered ear offenders.
Thank you.